Ethnically Ambiguous is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Hi. Hi.
Hey.
Hi. Hoo. Ha.
Hi. Hoo. Sorry, I was just trying to amp myself up. Today, wow, what a treat. Just me and you, Anna and I. Solo episode.
Just joking.
Kisses. But yeah, it's just the two of us. We're going to talk about some news. We're going to do some catching up at the top. Then we get into the conflict between Armenia and Azerbaijan. And we try to break it down as much as we can. And also get into Turkey's motivations, Russia's motivations. And yeah.
Yeah.
Informative times.
Stay tuned.
Who are we? Where did we come from? Who do we become? What is it to be? What to be is it? Where are we? Who are my parents? Where are my pets? Why were we born? We are Ethnically Ambiguous.
Hi.
Hi, Shireen.
Hi, Anna. You brought up a very interesting point right before we started recording, that this will come out after the election. We're recording this on the 30th of October, which means this is our last recording pre-election day, which is strange.
Yeah.
This is going to come out in the future.
I think when this comes out, y'all will know who hopefully won or who refused to step down.
Yeah.
What a time to be alive. You know, I'm actually, a lot of people are tripping, but I found calm in the fact that what happens, happens. You know, you did your part.
Yeah, I have a theory about what might happen.
Go ahead.
I don't know if I should publicize it on the radio waves, but this is what I think will happen in the future. I think Biden okay. will win. I think he'll die in February.
Oh my God.
I think he's barely holding on. I think he's barely holding on.
Jesus.
I mean, yeah, it's morbid, but he's an old guy and
that took a turn.
I get a very similar vibe from his oldness that I did with RBG's oldness, like both like barely hanging on, you know, kind of vibes. I feel that very strongly with him.
Well, she didn't hold on though.
She didn't, but I feel the same energy, and that will mean that we'll have our first woman and woman of color president for the first time. It's a weird way of getting it, but
so you're saying Kamala is going to whack Joe Biden?
I don't think she's... No. I think he's just going to go on his own. I think he's ready. I think he's been ready. I don't know. That's my theory, man.
I don't think he can. I don't think he can because of Hunter.
You don't think he can die?
Yes, I don't think Joe is ready to leave Hunter behind.
That's a good... I mean, yeah, I can see that.
You know, like, people will, like, die, like, if their significant other dies, and then they'll die, like, soon after, because they're like, well, right. they're gone, I've kind of let go, and now I can, like, be at peace, mm-hmm. so I can let myself go. Like, I mean, I don't know. I just feel like I don't feel like Hunter Biden is fully at peace yet. Like, even if he wins the election, I feel like, you know, there's still the concern about Hunter, like, and his health and yeah. well-being. And
I'm giving him till February, that's all. I'm kidding. I mean, I know it's morbid to say that.
I do believe that, you know, maybe Kamala will be like, all right, old man, come into this room real quick. I got something to show
yeah.
you. Wapa!
I mean, I just definitely don't think he'll make it 4 years.
Pressure point, karate chop.
Like, 4 years is a long time. Like, I don't think he's going to make it. Like, if and hopefully when he does win, I don't think he'll make it for his full term. Like, I really think that he is barely hanging by a thread. That's just the vibe I get. I don't know, man. I don't know. Maybe he'll surprise us all and live till 100.
Mm.
But I am very terrified of, regardless of the outcome, hopefully it's a good outcome, but regardless of it, I'm so terrified of Trump's culty followers and what they'll do.
Well, gun sales are up.
Yeah, I read that Walmart, in anticipation of election day, has taken guns out of, like, they're not selling guns right now or Great. Something like that. Maybe I'm misremembering. It was obviously like some Twitter headline because I'm garbage, but Like, who reads actual news anymore? Just the headlines. But yeah.
Sorry, I just died. I just died, like, in my insides.
It is a weird moment in time to be recording something, knowing that in just a few days, everything might change. Yeah, this is a weird moment in time to remember.
I think if Trump wins, at least we will know.
Mm-hmm.
We will have our final peace, our final rest, which is non-physical existence, because the country will burn. Not even the country, the world will just burn up because of climate change, because all these Republicans will deny it. And Amy Coney Barrett will vote.
I'm so livid about that. I'm so mad.
Yeah. Well, so mad. There's nothing more useless than like Democratic leadership. I don't even know. Like, their whole, like, God.
What's the fucking point?
We cannot let this country, the democracy, burn to the ground. And then we're like, well, are you going to do anything about it? And they're like, oh, you wanted us to do something about it. Oh, that's so funny. We're actually all conservative white people as well, coincidentally enough. And all the young people of color who are actually trying to make change, they're annoying, right? They're like, oh my God, fuck off, Nancy Pelosi.
Yeah.
Fuck off, Dianne Feinstein.
I shared this image that was like an amalgamation of all the faces of Congress, all the faces on both the right and the left. And a mishmash of every face just looks like a white dude. It doesn't matter. They're all just conservative white people.
Man.
But
it's a...
But yeah.
It's bullshittery.
The Amy Coney Barrett thing is really infuriating because not only is she the youngest and least experienced, has never fucking tried a case or anything, but because she's the youngest, she's going to be on the fucking court for all the fucking eternity because it's a life sentence, essentially. I'm just so angry at COVID for teasing at us that it was going to join the resistance when it infected Donald Trump and not really doing anything about it. Like, I want COVID to take out Trump, McConnell, Barrett. Like, I want them gone. It was just a tease. And I want to go back to those 3 days where I felt alive again, where we thought Trump wasn't going to be alive.
Here's a little. So I'm in my childhood bedroom right now. I'm recording this because I'm on like a road trip around the West Coast, mostly just, I went up to Seattle.
Mm-hmm.
I stopped in Eugene on the way. Then on the way back, I went to Bend, Oregon, which I gotta say, shout out Bend, Oregon. Loved it. Loved nice. Bend, Oregon.
I really want to go up there and explore Oregon.
I loved Bend, Oregon. Went to Crater Lake National
That's
Park.
That's my go-to place.
Gorgeous.
I want to go.
Beautiful, beautiful place. Went, drove through Klamath Falls, which was great. Very funny place, Oregon. You can't, you know, pump your own gas yesterday as I was driving through Oregon near Klamath Falls. A nice man. a nice man with a Confederate flag face mask pumped my gas, which I didn't even notice at first. Zach was like, Confederate flag on his face. And I was like, yeah, okay. But he was very nice. He didn't say anything to me. He was just like, oh, yeah. What would you like? And I was like, you know, fill it up on regular. And he's like, okay, sounds good. Like, not, like that's why I didn't notice.
You peeled out of there?
Yeah. That's the thing. We didn't peel out because it's a long story, but I had to, like, get some ice for some food that I was, like, transporting. But, like, very low key, like, I didn't notice until Zach pointed out, and then I really looked at it, and I was like, oh, that is a full-on Confederate flag on his face. And I have become so just... I just didn't notice. Like, I'm just numb to everything at this point. Like, I was like, yeah, Oregon, white supremacy, KKK, sure. Because we were out driving in the boons for the most part. I shouldn't say the boons. Just, like, the countryside, small towns for the majority of the trip up and down Oregon. Because to, like, get into, like, Bend and Crater Lake, you're kind of out there. So many Trump Pence flags. Just Trumps.
God.
Like certain that towns.
So upsetting.
I was like, I'm not going to stop for gas here because I don't want to support your Trump Pence bullshit. Like, I'm not trying to give money to your economy, you asshole. Which is not a great way to think, but.
No, but it's true. I mean, it's so unfortunate. I mean, I've wanted to go to Crater Lake for like a decade ever since I saw a photo of it. And I want to explore Oregon and the Pacific Northwest really badly. But it's so unfortunate that it's kind of surrounded by complete ignorance. Like, it is a beautiful place surrounded with a lot of backwards regressive people and regressive views.
Yeah. It was really very beautiful. I loved Bend, Oregon. We stayed in a little tiny hotel that was on the river. Ooh. Called the Deschutes.
Ooh,
the,
it was romantic.
Well, I mean, it was pretty basic. I mean, it was just like all old white people. But they allowed dogs. So I was like, yeah, fuck it.
Perfect.
Crash here for a night. But what I was trying to say is, I'm at my parents' house. We stopped here. Our next stop will be back to LA in a few days. But yeah, like I'm just sitting next to this bookshelf and there's like all these like Dexter books. And I'm like, just thinking like, what an easy time when like I was reading like Dexter in the Dark in like high school or wherever the fuck. And just like doing my thing. Not even like worried. Like there's a Gone with the Wind, which I should get rid of. But just so oblivious to what was to come.
Simpler times.
I have a fucking Christy Alley book. I should get rid of that. That wow. Dumb yeah, burn Trumpster. Wow. I did not see that coming, did I?
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of plot she kind of showed her true colors pretty. I have an Ellen DeGeneres comedy, but like, come on. What is all this trash? All these people showing their true colors being motherfuckers. I have one of the first Chelsea Handler books, which is not too bad. She's actually come a long way. She's crossed over to like realizing that she lives in a bubble, which is good.
Yeah, I mean, she has a whole shtick about her privilege, and that's her. That's become her brand, really, is like, I have white privilege, let me talk about it, which is helpful, I suppose.
I have American Psycho on my bookshelf, which, again, pretty, you know, that's a good, I saw it coming, white men not to be trusted. Mm-hmm. that's all I got for that. White men, don't trust them.
Yeah, that's the moral of life, really.
But I do have some Harry Potters, gonna have to burn those.
Yeah, so many people. Yeah, you're right. They're showing their true colors as we go along. Yeah. But if you guys haven't noticed, it's just me and Anna today.
Oh,
it's just the two of us.
It's just the two of us.
If you guys haven't noticed, that's what... I mean, I'm sure you guys... I guess there's an intro before this that we record after, but it's just the two of us, and we decided we were going to talk the majority of this episode about the conflict between Azerbaijan and Armenia. In the Nagorno-Karabakh region. I'm probably going to say that wrong throughout
I sent
this,
it to you, the pronunciation. Didn't
I saw, I saw. But I still, Nagorno- every time I look at the word...
Karabakh. Karabakh? I don't know. Unfortunately,
Karabakh.
We suck.
Karabakh.
Karabakh.
Yeah, Nagorno-Karabakh. But it's been going on for a couple weeks, and we haven't really done a topical episode in a minute, so...
Yeah, we figured we would... So... To give some insight, like, I don't know a lot about it. Like, I've read a lot about it, but the unfortunate thing is I just don't understand it because to me it feels so convoluted yet not at the same time that it's just very clear. And again, it is very complicated, but to me it feels like just classic bullying of the Armenian race, like the Armenian culture and the Armenian ethnicity. It's like I never fully understand why they
want
to... I
mean, I think it's a little bit more complicated than that. I think...
Well, that's what I'm saying. It's more complicated, yes. But I'm saying in my own personal understanding, it feels like never-ending bullshit of attacking the Armenian ethnicity. I don't... It never feels like reading, it just, to the end for me, it always goes like, just leave them the fuck alone to exist. Like, stop trying to ethnically cleanse Armenians.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's what it looks like from the outside. And there's definitely a lot of casualties that have been caught in the crossfire. But I also feel the same way. Like, this conflict is so much more complicated than I can even understand. And I personally don't even feel qualified to talk about it, let alone, like, try to dilute it into a podcast episode. But I hope that we can at least make it a little bit more understandable, because the more I understand about it, the more I'm realizing that it's just like a political... game. It's a clusterfuck that involves countries that aren't even Armenia or Azerbaijan. There's Russia, there's Turkey. I'm looking at it more as a fight for resources and a fight for control. And I think what happens with a lot of conflicts is that larger superpowers operate under the guise of smaller powers in their quest for control. And in my opinion, this is a conflict between Russia and Turkey. And we're seeing it play out with smaller civilian, like smaller countries. They're the ones that are being murdered, essentially. And there's so much history between Armenia and Turkey that is like impossible to ignore.
Yeah, like the Armenian genocide.
Yeah.
Where the Turks tried to basically wipe out Armenians. They tried to ethnically cleanse Armenians.
Yeah. And Turkey has denied that it was a genocide. Of course. I think that is just not a good look for Turkey.
And it doesn't help that they have like a conservative Erdogan in power.
Yeah, it doesn't help. I kind of want to get into Turkey's role in all of this because I do think it's a little bit more complicated than just an attempt at ethnic cleansing. I think Armenians are being caught in the crossfire in a struggle between two powers for resources because Azerbaijan is really beneficial for Turkey as far as resources and as far as their economy goes. And Armenia is much poorer and it is struggling. And with all the history, it feels like a personal vendetta. I really want to emphasize that it's a little bit more complicated and it's not as black and white. I don't think that's the intention of it, is what I'm trying to say. I'm not like defending either party. I would love there to be peace. I just don't want to make one party the villain and one party the victim because I think it's a little bit more complicated. Obviously, I stand with Armenians because they're the underdog, because they're poorer, they don't have as much military backing. Like, it's impossible to deny that they're being attacked. But I think it's really unfortunate the way larger countries, Turkey and Russia included, utilize smaller countries to get what they want without regard for their populations. I was like kind of nervous even like attempting to talk about this conflict because it's just so convoluted.
Okay, I want to go over the basics before you break down the higher powers who are pulling strings. So fighting has broken out between Armenia and Azerbaijan, which are two former Soviet Union republics in the Caucasus region mountain area, which is Middle East area. And at the heart of this decades-old conflict is the Nagorno-Karabakh region, and it is recognized as a part of Azerbaijan, but it's controlled by ethnic Armenians. And they've been fighting a very bloody war over the region since the 1980s, early 1990s. And technically, they declared a ceasefire, but they've never managed to agree to a peace treaty. So we're going to post a bunch of links in the footnotes going deeper into what's going on. Like, I'm just going to go over the overview because unfortunately, like Shireen was saying, it's very complicated. I don't think I can do it justice explaining this all. I do recommend going back and checking out a Daily Zeitgeist episode that was recently posted. It would be like maybe 2 weeks ago, a week ago, where they had on British journalist Jake Hanrahan, who hosts Q Clearance on iHeart, but they go over the Armenia-Azerbaijan conflict. I probably said his last name wrong because I know it's something similar to that, but there's a lot going on.
We can also link the episode in the footnotes.
Yeah, we'll link the episode in the footnotes. It's a great idea.
Yeah.
So yeah, go check that out because they talk about it in detail. So yeah, Nagorno-Karabakh is a region in Azerbaijan. Population is majority Armenian. As the Soviet Union saw increasing tensions in its constituent republics in the 1980s, Nagorno-Karabakh voted to become a part of Armenia, which sparked a war which ended up in ceasefire in 1994. Since then, Nagorno-Karabakh has remained part of Azerbaijan, but is controlled by separatist ethnic Armenians backed by the Armenian government. Negotiations over decades, which have been mediated by international powers, which Shireen will talk about in a little bit, have never resulted in a peace treaty. Armenia is a majority Christian religion, while oil-rich Azerbaijan is majority Muslim. And of course, Turkey has close ties to Azerbaijan, who's there on their side, and Russia is allied with Armenia, although Russia does have good relations with Azerbaijan. So the Caucasus Mountains is a strategically important region in Southeast Europe. For centuries, different powers in the region, both Christian and Muslim, have vied for control over it. And modern-day Armenia and Azerbaijan both became part of the Soviet Union when it was formed in the 1920s, even though Nagorno-Karabakh was an ethnic majority Armenian region, but the Soviets gave control over the area to the Azerbaijan authorities. So the Armenians in Nagorno-Karabakh have made several calls to be transferred to Armenian authority control in the following decades. But it was only as the Soviet Union began to collapse in the late 1980s that Nagorno-Karabakh's regional parliament officially voted to become part of Armenia. And of course, Azerbaijan sought to suppress the separatist movement while Armenia backed it, and this led to ethnic clashes. And after Armenia and Azerbaijan declared independence from Moscow, it turned into a full-scale war. So tens of thousands died, up to a million were displaced amid reports of ethnic cleansing and massacres committed by both sides. And most of those displaced in the war were Azerbaijanis. So Armenian forces gained control of Nagorno-Karabakh before a Russian-brokered ceasefire was declared in 1994. After that deal, Nagorno-Karabakh remained part of Azerbaijan, but since then has been mostly governed by a separatist self-declared republic run by ethnic Armenians and backed by the Armenian government. It also established the Nagorno-Karabakh line of contact, separating Armenian and Azerbaijan forces. Peace talks have taken place since then, mediated by the Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe, Minsk Group, a body set up in 1992 and chaired by France, Russia, and the United States. So again, higher powers. But so far, a peace treaty has not been signed. Like we said earlier, clashes have continued throughout the past three decades, with the last serious flare-up in 2016, with dozens of troops on both sides being killed. And of course, the conflict is further complicated by geopolitics. But before we get into that, let's take a quick break and we'll come back and I'll finish this up. And then Shireen's going to speak further on the conflict. And we are back. We're talking about giving some history and the basics of the Armenia-Azerbaijan conflict. So, yes, as I said right before the break, the conflict between the two is complicated by geopolitics. NATO member state Turkey was the first nation to recognize Azerbaijan's independence in 1991. And former Azeri president Heydar Aliyev once described the two as one nation with two states. Both share a Turkic culture and populations, and Turkey's president Erdogan has pledged his nation's support for Azerbaijan, but Turkey has no official relations with Armenia. And in 1993, Turkey shut its borders with Armenia in support of Azerbaijan during the early 90s war over Nagorno-Karabakh. So Turkey's made it quite clear, and I mean that literally, because they genocided these people, that they do not fuck with Armenia. But yes, Armenia has good relations with Russia, and there is a Russian military base in Armenia, and both are members of the Collective Security Treaty Organization military alliance. However, President Vladimir Putin has also good relations with Azerbaijan, and Moscow has called for a ceasefire. So in 2018, Armenia underwent a peaceful revolution, sweeping longtime ruler Serzh Sargsyan from power, and protest leader Nikol Pashinyan became the prime minister after free elections that year. The prime minister Pashinyan agreed with Azerbaijan's president Ilham Aliyev to de-escalate tensions and set up the first military hotline between the two countries. In 2019, both nations issued a statement declaring the need for taking concrete measures to prepare the populations for peace. As yet, however, nothing has come of those words. It is unclear which nation started the latest violence, but tensions have been very high for months, and clashes in July and continuing until now have left many casualties on both sides. Yeah. So yeah. That's some history.
Yeah, just to like reiterate, I feel so unqualified to talk about this, but I hope that we can at least give some background. Like, just another example of, like, countries fighting their fights in, like, others' lands, like, regardless of the casualties. Like, Syria is an example of that, because you can say the conflict is, like, was a Saudi Arabia and Iran conflict, but if it was fought on Syrian soil. And right now, Syria is literally occupied by Russia. And even, like, a couple days ago, Russia bombed, like, the last rebellion enclave in Syria, which is in Idlib. And Turkey has troops there, because they intervened in the conflict kind of late, like maybe 2 years ago. But Turkey brought troops to northern Syria and Idlib, and Russia bombed Idlib. So even that, in my opinion, has become Turkey versus Russia, which is, and they're in Syria. So I don't know. It just, it becomes really convoluted the more conflicts drag on and the more countries intervene.
Yeah. I do want to say, so Armenia has accused Azerbaijan of firing missiles into the capital, while Azerbaijan has said that several of its towns and its second largest city were attacked.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of where they're at right now, is kind of pointing fingers as to who started it.
Yeah.
I feel like there's such a concept in the Middle East, like, don't worry, like, they'll work it out because, like, America or whoever will get involved and figure it out for them. But it's like these conflicts, like, sit and the tension boils to a point yeah. where, like, sorry, you can't just show up and be like, hey, guys, this is how it has to go. It's like, no, mm-hmm. like, this is long-standing tension, if you will, but like even just like long standing, I want to say like beef, which is so dumb, but it's like it is.
But it's true. Like
it's beef that spans decades,
like generations.
You can't just yeah. go in and be like, sign a peace treaty. Like
mm-hmm.
these are complicated issues.
It's just generational trauma and issues yeah. that are impossible to solve with a piece of paper.
Yeah.
And you're right. Like at this point, it is kind of just pointing fingers of like, you started this, you started that, because Azerbaijan has also accused Armenia of a cluster bomb attack that killed like 25 people, I think, a couple days ago. And Armenia has denied it. So both sides are being like, you did this to me. And they're like, nope, we didn't do that. But it's obviously, I don't know. It's just, it's kind of silly what I think about it. And it's really unfortunate that I say that word, because I know real lives are being like taken.
Yeah.
Just seems a little petty. Like it just seems just, I don't know. But let me get into a little bit of history as far as Turkey is concerned, because Turkey is a huge player in this game. So as Anna mentioned, Nagorno-Karabakh is an internationally recognized part of Azerbaijan, but is populated and controlled by ethnic Armenians. And about 30,000 people were killed between 1991 and 1994 in a war in that region. Azerbaijan has rejected any solution that would leave Armenians in control of the enclave, which it considers to be illegally occupied. Armenia regards the territory as part of its historic homeland and says the population there needs protection. The Nagorno-Karabakh Defense Ministry has recorded 1,119 military deaths since the fighting erupted on September 27th, and Azerbaijan has not disclosed any of its military casualties, but Russia has estimated as many as 5,000 deaths in total. So what's Turkey's role in all of this? So NATO, the US, Russia, and Iran have repeatedly called for a halt to the intense fighting that broke out between Azerbaijan and Armenia over the disputed region in late September. Turkey has also called for a truce, but it's struck with a different tone because it's siding with Azerbaijan. In early October, Turkish President Erdogan, he praised Azerbaijan's great operation to both defend its own territories and to liberate the occupied Karabakh. He said that Turkey stands with and will continue to stand with, quote, friendly, brotherly Azerbaijan with all of our means and our heart. Nagorno-Karabakh is internationally recognized, as I said, as Azerbaijani, but it has been the subject of several UN resolutions calling for an end of the occupation of Azeri lands. Turkey and Azerbaijan have a strong economic, military, cultural, and linguistic ties. As Anna mentioned, Turkey and Azerbaijan have strong economic, military, cultural, and linguistic ties. They're, as Erdogan said, one nation, two states. Meanwhile, Turkey and Armenia have a fraught history. As we all know, Armenia calls the killing of up to 1.5 million Armenians in the late Ottoman period a genocide, and Turkey refutes this labeling of what happened, even though it's pretty clear that the Ottoman Empire did a lot of atrocious things. So to yeah. kind of draw the line at that, it's not a good look.
Yeah.
But Turkey's vocal and fervent support of Azerbaijan has angered Western nations, who have accused it to adding fuel to a dangerous conflict. Analysts say that Turkey's backing of Azerbaijan in this round of fighting has played a significant role in what is the most serious flare-up in the region since the 1990s, and it reveals insights into Turkey's wider ambitions in the region. So why does it have unconditional support to Azerbaijan? While Turkey has supported Azerbaijan's claims over the disputed territory in the region, it did not play a significant rhetorical or military role in the support of Azerbaijan in its previous conflicts with Armenia. Turkey and Azerbaijan's relationship, it took a hit in 2008 when Turkey pursued a policy of reapproachment with Armenia. Sinan Ulgen is a former Turkish diplomat who now chairs the Istanbul think tank Center for Economics and Foreign Policy Studies. He told Al Jazeera that the failure of those diplomatic efforts between Turkey and Armenia was a watershed for Turkey and Azerbaijani relations. It's only after that that the relationship recovered and deepened. And military ties have deepened significantly between Azerbaijan and Turkey over the past 10 years, as the oil and gas-rich state spent heavily to gain military superiority over its much poorer neighbor, Armenia. Meanwhile, the AKP, which is Turkey's acronym that stands for the Justice and Development Party, the current foreign policy has shifted from the no problems with neighbors soft power approach that it pursued in the early to mid-years of its rule. Because in recent years, Turkey has intervened militarily, as I mentioned, in Syria, also in Libya, northern Iraq, and it has pursued a more assertive approach in a dispute with Greece and Cyprus over energy rights and maritime borders in the Eastern Mediterranean. In recent years, Turkey has become much bolder in its support for Azerbaijan, particularly over the last year. In July, after fighting broke out between Azeri and Armenian forces north of the Nagorno-Karabakh region close to gas pipelines, Turkey pledged its unconditional backing to Azerbaijan. Savant E. Cornell, the director of American Foreign Policy Council Central Asia Caucus Institute, can there be a longer name of an institute? I don't know. But they told Al Jazeera that Azerbaijan and Turkey regard Armenian's nationalistic and more pro-Western Prime Minister Pashinyan to be more of a threat than his predecessors. And the prime minister is not popular in Moscow. Azerbaijan likely thought that Russia, which has deep ties to Azerbaijan as well as Armenia, it wouldn't stand in its way of an Azeri offensive on the region at this time. And they're kind of right, because Russia stayed in the shadows. Azerbaijan has made significant gains in the Armenian-occupied territory over the last month. On October 22nd, Azerbaijan said that it had driven out Armenian forces to take full control of its border with Iran. It's kind of like, what are Turkey's aims? So it has economic interest because Azerbaijan has a lot of gas, a lot of oil. It obviously goes beyond like brotherly love. It's not just cultural ties. Azerbaijan is crucial for Turkey's energy security and is a major investor in the ailing Turkish economy. Ankara's gas imports from Azerbaijan rose by 23% in the first half of 2020. SOCAR, which is Azerbaijan's state oil company, has become the biggest foreign investor in Turkey. Ulgen also said that Turkey aims to become an influential regional power and it wants more of a stake in future political settlements in the Nagorno-Karabakh issue. Turkey sees the Minsk, the OSCE mediation group that we mentioned earlier. Turkey sees that it's being co-chaired ineffectively by Russia, France, and the U.S. He goes on to say that Turkey is realistic in the sense that in Karabakh, the aim is not to eliminate Russian influence. The aim is to gain influence so that Turkey requires leverage over Russia that it could potentially use in Syria or in Libya. So again, it's just like a huge power game and stupid power play that is at the cost of so many lives. They're just innocent people.
Yeah. I mean, that's kind of what happens. It's like the people like the Armenians, they become pawns. Like they become the people who have to die.
Mm-hmm.
I just think Azerbaijan being such a rich, also having the backing of Turkey and Iran, like I truly feel like the Armenians deserve better. In my 100%. Mind, even though it's so complicated, I still can't help to be like, you don't need to fucking kill Armenians over this.
Yeah.
Like you can a group of people live in a region and just exist. Because guess what? That region is a very small part of Azerbaijan. I really struggle with this because to me, it's like you don't need it all. And maybe, you know, I'm just a dumb American who's just like, you have so much. What is wrong with just letting Armenians exist in this area? Look, there's maps in our links. You'll see. So like Azerbaijan you know, it's not a huge country. You know, it's not like the size of Iran, but like the Nagorno-Karabakh region compared to all of Azerbaijan.
It doesn't make sense that the lengths that countries go for control is appalling to me. Like, why do you need to have control here? Just let it be. Like, let it exist.
I mean, technically, it's a part of Azerbaijan, but, like, there's nothing wrong with, like, ethnic Armenians living in this region.
Yeah, especially if it's been controlled by ethnic Armenians, you know what I mean?
Yeah, like, it just they dispersed everywhere they could after the genocide.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You don't need to fucking kill people over land. And that's, you know, of course, what am I even saying? It's like, that's all we've ever been doing for histories of just killing people over land. And
for less than that, like it's really, I mean, war will never make sense to me, but it just feels so senseless in this case, because you're right. Like, why now? And why can't they just continue living? Like, why?
But why can't they live together?
I never understood that. I don't know. Maybe there's just too much.
There's too much long
generational trauma tension, and history there. Yeah.
It's unfortunate.
It kind of is reminiscent to me. It's completely different circumstances, but it's a little bit reminiscent of Palestine and Israel, like where there's just too much history and too much trauma there to unpack or even get into. I'm going to wrap up this Turkey section after the break. We'll be right back. We're back. So as I mentioned, it's not looking too hot for Turkey right now. And a lot of people are saying that Turkey can further damage its international standing and weaken its hand in any negotiations if the fighting drags on and if Turkey is seen to be fanning the flames of the conflict, which growing numbers of civilians and young people on both sides are being maimed and killed. And analysts agree that the main risk for Turkey is if Azerbaijan crosses one of Russia's red lines, which some speculate can entail Azeri forces taking control or taking over Nagorno-Karabakh's biggest city, which is Stepanakert, or severing its enclave from the Armenian supply lines. So if Moscow activates its defense pact with Armenia and intervenes militarily on its behalf, it would raise the prospect of a direct Turkish intervention and a confrontation between Turkey and Russia that neither country wants, but it feels like it's bubbling to that point, in my opinion. Cornell said that Azerbaijan's president, Aliyev, surely understands that red lines could trigger a Russian reaction. Mm. But he also goes on to say that even if it wanted to at some point, Turkey may not even have enough sway over Azerbaijan to halt its military offensive, because he says that Azerbaijan is very independent at this point, and they have been willing to challenge everybody when it's in their crucial national interest. Meanwhile, Russia has so far excluded Turkey from truce negotiations, and Moscow maintains immense logistical and political advantages over Turkey in the Caucasus. The last thing that he says was, at the end of this, Russia will broker and dictate the peace terms, and I guess Turkey is aware of that. Which is a good thing to kind of wrap this all up with. It's ultimately Turkey and Russia squabbling over something, Azerbaijan kind of being the offensive attacker in all of this. It's far more equipped militarily because it has weapons from not only Turkey, but it has Israeli drones. And I only mention that to say that Israel is just selling weapons everywhere it can. Mm. And you'll find it everywhere. But
yeah,
I hope that kind of makes the conflict a little bit more understandable. Maybe it made it more confusing. I don't know. But I will reiterate, when it comes to global power, I feel... maybe this is like, I don't want to be like controversial here, but when it comes to global power, it's, for me, it's either Russia or the US kind of behind everything.
Yeah.
Russia, or I mean China, you can say, is the bit like as a economic power in comparison to the US. But when it comes to military power, it's Russia or us. Or I don't want to say us. I don't really feel a kinship to this country. But it's either Russia or America. Because you'll find them, either of these powers, behind something in some way. And at the end of all of this, this seems like another struggle for resources, for control, and Armenians are being caught in the crossfire. And this conflict is much more tense because of the history between Turkey and Armenia. Mm-hmm. It would be different if this all of a sudden started happening. But no, this offensive has been, it's almost like a trigger. It's like a the worst kind of deja vu. But yeah, I always feel like such a child when I try to explain any of this stuff because I barely know what I'm saying. But I don't know, man.
Yeah. I don't know, comma, man. I mean, it always comes back like, fuck Erdogan, man. Ever since Erdogan came into power in Turkey, maybe this isn't right at all, but it feels like destabilization hit like overdrive. You know what I mean? Like, that guy's a fucking fuck.
Yeah, he's definitely shameless in his attempts at power and
but even how like he really attempts feels. At like silencing and like control. It's like, guess what? Turkey used to be, it was not a religious republic, but Erdogan like came in and was like, no, you can't do this, you can't do that. Terrorism skyrocketed.
Yeah. I think what really irritates me about Erdogan and the current leadership in Turkey is that even with this conflict, some people are making it like a Christian versus Muslim thing. And I really dislike that because I don't want it to be that black and white. I don't want people to look at this and be like, oh yeah, Azerbaijani majority Muslim villains. I think that's why I'm just trying to be as, not objective, but like just state the facts as they are, because I never want it to feel like Muslims are this attacker, even though Erdogan makes it really hard because he's kind of been regressive in his utilization of religion, in my opinion.
I mean, I agree. I think he's a fuck. He shines a bad light on all of Islam with his bullshit. What I mean, a lot of leaders do that, but like,
yeah, you can see it in Saudi Arabia, you can see it in Iran. Like, it's just really unfortunate when it comes to Western people or people that aren't familiar with what Islam actually is.
Yeah.
When they only see like a headline of like majority Muslim this, Christian majority that. I think that's what's a little bit triggering for me is that like, I know better, you know better, a lot of my friends know better, but other people that are already associating Arabs or Muslims with violence will be like, oh yeah, this is another great example of X, Y, and Z. And that just makes me furious. I don't know. Maybe I'm a little triggered also. I wasn't planning on talking about this, but have you seen The Boys?
Mm-hmm. I like it.
I had a lot of issues with it, honestly. Like, I know it's a satire.
How much did you watch?
I watched it all. I binged this in the last 2 weeks. And I know it's a satire. I'm well aware. But just to be like really brief, they have like a Arab terrorist plot line. And the only time you really hear Arabic or see Arabic is when it's associated with terrorism and like literal like violent things. And I just think that's a really damaging portrayal, even with satire as the excuse. Because again, you're driving home that Islam is a violent terrorist thing. And like, I've just been really stewing in my brain of this excuse of satire when it comes to this stuff. And I think I'm going to have to do like a separate episode all about that because I have so many thoughts on this issue. It's on Prime. And when you look at like the character names for like four of these like literal hijackers that are all speaking like broken Arabic because they're not all Arab, not that matters, but there's literal like their names are cockpit terrorist, heavy terrorist, clean cut terrorist. And what was the last one? It was like, I don't fucking know. But I think of like Arab actors that have to take those roles. And it's like really unfortunate. I don't want to get on this tangent. This is not what the episode's about. But I am so upset when it's boiled down to just a simple religious battle. And maybe it is that for some people. Maybe I'm the idiot here that doesn't want it to be that simple. Maybe the fact that Armenians are Christian majority and Azerbaijan is Muslim majority, maybe that's an inexcusable fact that we can't ignore. And maybe I'm just being naive and wanting to believe that it's like bigger powers at be. But I really do want to believe that because the alternative is a little bit too upsetting for me. Anyway, yeah, maybe I'll do the representation shtick another time.
Well, I mean, that's The Boys, I think, is trying to portray pure like madness in that sense, because what they're saying is like I mean, later on, if you watch, those terrorists are created by us, which I thought was a very, like, the Americans created terrorists.
Yeah, I saw that.
So I think that was, like, an interesting criticism for me of, like, oh, we, you know, I thought that was, like, kind of a metaphor of, like, yeah, we created those insurgents that we're now fighting against by destroying their country. I, you know, honestly, like, I'm so used to that sort of portrayal of, like, terrorists attack a plane that I, you know, like, in my mind, I don't even see it because I'm numb to all that. I'm so used to it. Like, that's just what happens.
I just need some terrorists
to portray. But that's the thing is, like, I don't expect it from, like, that because I know what it is. I know what it is. It's like, I'm watching this and I'm like, yes, this is bullshit, whatever. But you know what? There are plot lines that interest me.
Yeah. I mean, I obviously finished it. Like, I wanted to know what happens. I think for me, I get really upset hearing Arabic that way. Like, it's my first language, it's the language of my family, and only hearing it in such violent, really disgusting ways really breaks my heart, because I know that people that don't speak Arabic will associate Arabic with violence in that way, the same way that, like, Allahu Akbar has become literally, like, a phrase that you use before you commit violence, when really all it means is, like, I love God, you know what I mean? Like, I think that's what triggers me more than anything else. And if they had hired an Arab actor in any sense that wasn't, like, all bad, I would have kind of been a little bit more lenient when it comes to the boys. But I didn't really get Arab representation or Middle Eastern representation that wasn't completely hack. So I don't know. I guess I'm a little bit, like, I just expected better at this juncture in, like, a 2019-2020 show.
Yeah, but we know.
I know.
There's nothing happening that's, I mean, I can't imagine representation for us ever getting better. I mean, I know we demand it, but it's like, I've come to this point where I'm like, it does, like, you can't look at white people and be like, do it right, because white people will never do it right because they've never lived our experience, Shereen. Like, you have to do it right. That is the unfortunate situation about our lives. Like, when I'm watching stuff like that, like, that's why I'm so numb to it, because I don't expect shit from people like that. I don't expect these fucking white folk who made The Boys, who made, like, a cool comic book fucking, ooh, edgy, you know, like, it is what it is to me. Like, it's just like a blur. I'm watching it because I'm high and I just want something to keep my mind off bullshit, you know? And I see stuff like that and I'm like, yep, check. They didn't get it, you know, like, that is just another one of those things. That's why it always comes back to, if you, and, you know, my mom always says, you want it done right, do it yourself, which is why I think that should power you to be like, fuck that. I will make, you know, it should light a fire under you to do it fucking better and do it right. And that's, like, it makes me think, yeah, fuck them, you know, like, whatever. Like, you know, I saw your tweets about it and I was like, Shereen, you'll do it fucking better. Like, fuck these people. Don't, I know it makes you angry, but take that anger, put it in your fucking coochie hole and be like, boom, like a fucking rocket up to the sky and be like, fuck you, middle finger white people who think you understand the Middle East, and just fucking do it better. Because guess what? You are the only representation at this point that's going to get it right, because these fucks don't get shit. You can be like, hey, we consulted with an Arab, and you're like, okay, well, you should have had an Arab write the fucking script, you know? Like, you should have had a fucking person of color actually in there writing it and being like, bitch, you cannot be calling them cockpit terror. Like, you need to actually create texture if you're going to be doing this bullshit. And that's why you got to do it, Shereen. You got to fucking work your ass off and be like, if you guys are going to do bullshit like this, then fuck you. I'm going to come in with the real representation. I'm going to make it actually right. I'm going to do it where people aren't sitting there like, okay, I did not need you to yell Allahu Akbar before you fucking dropped that bomb or whatever, before you shot your gun or whatever the fuck. Like,
yeah.
How about, like, hey, you know, when my mom is, like, about to, like, you know, serve dinner and she's like, wait, you know, like, very, like, hold on. You only have this food because God has given you this right to, you know, like, it's like real fucking homely, real, like, everyday representation, you know? Only you can prevent forest fires, Shereen. Only you can prevent trash-ass television from misrepresenting people of color or Arabs or Muslims, because they don't give a fuck. And that's once I hit that realization of, like, this ain't it. They'll never get it. I felt better watching shit like that, because I was like, well, you know, I'm out here speaking the truth. You're out here speaking the truth. And again, you will make it right, because they will never make it right, because this industry is all, it's all for a stamp diversity, you know, like they literally had diversity stamps made so they could be like, two black characters in this TV show? Stamp
we're killing
diversity.
It,
and you're like, oh man, fuck you. It's all for a fucking check box, you know, like you're not doing shit. So let it, like
I
said,
you're completely right.
Fire up in your coochie, shoot up into the sky like a rocket.
Yeah,
that's my
thoughts. You're completely right. I think I came away from that being like, this just goes to show, as you said, we have to represent ourselves because no one else will.
Oh, they'll attempt to, but they'll fuck it up because they don't know
for sure.
Because that's the problem, is they'll be like, see, I gave you that, but I didn't actually hire anyone who is actually knowledgeable about this situation or lifestyle or upbringing to tell me how to do it. I just manifested it and called him Aziz or something and was like or Dev, classic like Indian names they'll just go to because they're like, this is the name I know. And it's
and
like,
also everyone can say Dev.
Easy for the whites.
Palatable.
Exactly.
No, you're right. I think I think I just get a little bit exhausted thinking about having to do it myself, but I think I want to. I think I'm just like, I'm trying to use my exhaustedness as fuel. I think I'm just running on fumes at this point, just in, with regards to everything.
Yeah.
I like the little tangent that we just had.
I'm sorry. I'm so exhausted. I'm also running on fumes. I've been driving too much on this road trip.
Yeah. But I'm glad we got to have a little episode. There's the two of us. I think people have been waiting for this kind of stuff. So I hope you guys enjoyed this topical catch-up episode.
Yeah.
Should I wrap us out?
Wrap us out, baby. Sorry, I got so overheated yelling just then.
It's okay. That was you were on one. That was great. I'm gonna like record that, making my ringtone.
Me scream. People are like, I'm sorry, is your phone ringing or someone yelling at you?
It's like, I need this for fuel.
Yeah.
Anyways, this is Ethnically Ambiguous. It's Ethnically AMB on Twitter and Ethnically Ambig AMBIG on Instagram. I am Shireen. It's Shirohiro on Instagram and Shirohiro 666 on Twitter.
And I'm at Anna Hosey on Twitter.
And until next time, I don't fucking know. Read the news.
Well,
stay informed.
Until next time, I hope you guys, depending on what the world situation is in, stay calm. Everything, you know, might not necessarily be okay, but just know that, you know, vote. Just know you have the power locally, and that builds up, hopefully, to the White House at some point. But, you know, you have the control to vote and see who runs your local elections and see who runs your city, so you can create from small and to hopefully bigger, you know, but
the ground up. And if it does go our way, if it does go blue, don't get complacent. Don't. That is not the end goal. Like, that is nowhere near the end goal. So it's always an uphill battle, so just keep fighting and do your best. Be nice to yourself. Yeah.
I'm so tired. Okay. All right, guys, stay alive. Ethnically Ambiguous is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.